Picture yourself on an airplane, watching a flight attendant smile graciously as a passenger berates her over a minor inconvenience. Behind that unwavering smile lies a profound concept that transformed our understanding of modern work. When sociologist Arlie Russell Hochschild observed a young Delta Airlines recruit writing down instructions to smile like you really mean it, she identified something revolutionary: emotional labor. This concept names something we all experience but struggled to identify: the work of managing our feelings to meet job requirements and social expectations. As our economy has shifted from manufacturing to services, roughly one-third of American workers now face substantial demands for emotional labor, including half of all working women. These jobs span various sectors, from the secretary creating a cheerful office, to the social worker showing appropriate concern, to the salesman generating excitement in potential buyers. Emotional labor represents a specific kind of work, the effort to induce or suppress feelings to create a particular outward appearance that produces the proper state of mind in others. While physical labor alienates factory workers from their bodies, emotional labor alienates service workers from their feelings. Consider the flight attendant's job. Beyond pushing meal carts and organizing evacuations, flight attendants perform the crucial emotional labor of creating passenger contentment. Their smiles become on them but not of them, extensions of makeup and uniform rather than genuine expressions. This commercialization of feeling affects different genders and social classes distinctly. Women, traditionally managers of feeling in private life, find themselves particularly suited for jobs requiring emotional labor. We all perform emotional acting in daily life through two distinct approaches. Surface acting changes only outward appearances, the forced smile or diplomatic laugh, while deep acting transforms the feelings themselves, producing genuine emotional expressions. Flight attendants employing various strategies to maintain required emotional displays, pretending to feel up until they actually do, using physical techniques like deep breathing, self-prompting with internal mantras, and reframing difficult passengers as scared children. Some even create detailed backstories for challenging passengers to maintain empathy. Unlike theater, this emotional labor transforms one's face and feelings into commodities to be sold. Feeling rules are cultural scripts guiding our emotional responses, revealing themselves in the gap between what we feel and what we think we should feel. These invisible guidelines manifest when we tell ourselves, "I shouldn't feel so angry," or when others ask, "Why are you so upset?" Different social groups follow varying rules. Women, Protestants, and middle-class people typically demonstrate greater emotional restraint than men, Catholics, and lower-class people. These rules become most visible when emotions misfit situations. At funerals, mourners navigate complex expectations, not too overwhelming to appear theatrical, not too restrained to seem uncaring. Medical professionals frequently interpret parents' stoicism at a child's terminal illness as either admirable strength or concerning detachment. Even seemingly natural emotions like parental love are governed by powerful social conventions. In private life, we bow to each other not only from the waist but from the heart, as feeling rules establish what we owe emotionally to others. These exchanges occur as either straight exchanges, following established rules, or improvisational exchanges, creative play with rules. In straight exchanges, we trade emotional currency at established rates, like when a novice seeks expert advice and pays with gratitude and deference. What's owed isn't just words, but sincere display through expressions, tone, and genuine feeling. We maintain mental ledgers of emotional debts, though rarely consciously. Improvisatory exchanges involve playing with the feeling rules themselves, creating humor through shared understanding. When emotions become part of a job, when management dictates feeling rules and customers receive more courtesy than workers, our relationship to our feelings fundamentally changes. corporate use of emotions creates emotive dissonance as workers struggle between genuine feelings and required displays. Airlines invest heavily in training focused not just on safety, but on maintaining perfect smiles, tone, and body language in challenging situations. These advertisements create unrealistic expectations, promising on-time service despite industry-wide delays and happy workers despite speed-ups. Sexualized advertising, "We really move our tails for you," burdens flight attendants with responding to passengers' sexual fantasies. Company control extends to physical appearance, with strict weight requirements enforced through regular weigh-ins, creating an underground culture of pre-flight starvation. When industry speed-ups drastically shorten passenger contact time, emotional labor becomes virtually impossible to deliver. Flight attendants describe a stark before and after period in commercial aviation. In the before era, three attendants served 75 passengers over 10 hours, with time for personal introductions. The after period features 12-hour duty days, serving 375 passengers on massive planes. Eye contact is deliberately avoided to prevent time-consuming requests. Deregulation brought discount people aboard in larger numbers, more inexperienced travelers, children, elderly passengers, while maintaining the same crew size. Turnaround times between flights shortened from 45 minutes to as little as 20 minutes, forcing crews to clean, restock, and prepare at an exhausting pace. Flight attendants respond to the contradiction between demanded emotional labor and impossible working conditions through their own version of the industrial slowdown. When pushed to breaking points, like passengers spitting or throwing tea, many workers consciously reject bringing their emotional selves to work. Workers who refuse emotional labor go into robot, withholding deep acting and retreating to surface acting. They openly protest, "I'm not a robot," meaning they'll pretend but won't hide that they're pretending. This resistance manifests in various ways: minimal eye contact, shorter responses, strictly enforced rules rather than flexible accommodation. As commercialized feeling becomes commonplace, our culture has paradoxically elevated the value of spontaneous, natural feeling. People now deliberately try to learn spontaneousness, treating authentic emotion as something to be recovered through conscious effort. Psychoanalysts and actors both recognize a false self, a disbelieved, unclaimed part of oneself. While this false self enables social functioning, problems arise when organizations claim workers' true selves as company assets. This manifests in two unhealthy patterns: the narcissist, typically male, who craves admiration, and the altruist, typically female, who becomes excessively focused on others' needs. When companies insert commercial purposes between feelings and their interpretation, workers lose connection with authentic emotional responses. Flight attendants learn to view their anger at demanding customers as personal failure rather than a reaction to power imbalances. Since the Managed Hearts publication, the emotional labor landscape has transformed. While many emotional proletariat jobs face automation, a new marketized private life sector has emerged, following complex hybrid feeling rules that are neither purely professional nor familial. As emotions become engineered and mass-produced, more people privately question, "What do I really feel?" In a world where our deepest emotions are commodified, reclaiming our authentic emotional lives becomes not just personal, but revolutionary. Perhaps true freedom begins with honoring what we actually feel, even as the world attempts to manage our hearts.